Alright, time for another draftphysics.com, debatephysics.com also, but again, the debate is hard to find. Any individuals on this planet willing to defend what they believe, in some sort of, I'll make an argument, you make an argument kind of way. So, without that, we're just stuck with what we're stuck with. Like I said, all I can do is make up their argument, and frankly, I obviously can't see the point of their argument, so how can I even make up their argument? It's right, I can't, because can't cognize it into anything. They have to basically say what I demand needs to be said, which is, yes, we need more evidence. Yes, they should have waited until there was evidence. Yes, they should have fixed positive and negative. Yes, they shouldn't have fell for 1/2 mv² as being something rational when there's no evidence it works. All that crap. Anyway, so, all we got is comments, and the comments just suck. So, this asshole wants to defend UFO theory. this is what you're going to waste your neurons on, is this silly idea. All right, and it is just silly. I mean, there's as much evidence that Jesus walked on water as there is UFO evidence. In the sense, it's just people telling stories. Okay, I mean, all the material evidence sucks. Okay, I mean, they don't have any metal. They don't have any anything. they don't have any technology. All they have is some silly story is that, the government covered it up. The alien craft somehow crashes the probes, and the scientists they hire to investigate it somehow see some purpose in keeping it a secret. it's just such a pile of crap. All right, anyway, if you bothered to look, you'd find Stan Friedman was a nuclear physicist. Who cares? Feynman's a physicist. Lots of people are physicists, and they say shit that's just fucking stupid. God does play dice with the universe. I mean, they believe all kinds of wacky shit. That's the whole point. That's the point I'm making, is that these are supposed to be smart people, and they don't seem to use much logical scrutiny in deciding what they're going to believe. All right, he gave a popular lecture. Another word I don't care too much for is this word popular. Okay, with a variety of evidence. No, there's no evidence in it. You've never seen... No, there was no evidence I ever saw before. There was nothing. Oh, look, they redacted government papers because, it has people's personal information in it. So what? That's evidence. So your argument is that if we could see all the stuff covered up by the black pen, it would somehow mean something? No, it wouldn't mean shit. Okay, but he failed to prevent his own death, so apparently this proves the whole thing is bunk. No, I just pointed out he's dead. He can't be interrogated anymore. And he didn't bother creating a whole bunch of good evidence videos or something. I mean, I'm sure there was video technology and he didn't videotape his compiled evidence. He didn't do any of this shit. So, what the fuck? All he did was talk shit. So, I mean, you can go play one of his lectures. I mean, it's all gimmick crap. And he's just a believer in somehow technology is going to solve our problems. Okay. Prevent his own death, so apparently proves the whole thing is bunk. No, what proves it's bunk is he'll talk for 20 minutes and he doesn't talk about a single shred of affirmative real evidence. He just talks about, they never proved it, shit. they didn't prove every single eyewitness was a moron. It's all just chicken shit excuses not to look. So, in the first place, I've seen it. You can't miss it in your life. And you listen to some of these wackos, and that's all they are. They just talk. They just tell a story, and it's just like they might as well be explaining to me how Jesus walked on water. Because, the witnesses saw it. So it's like Sasquatch or the Abominable Snowman or any of this crap. They can't bring any fur. They can't bring any real evidence. They just talk this shit about make-believe visitations. Okay, and that's all it is. I mean, the fact that you could make we have nuclear submarines means we can have nuclear airplanes. I mean, that kind of logic. It's just stupid. All right, anyway. So, okay, go ahead. Waste your neurons on belief, okay? And I'm sure you believe for some stupid reason. You don't believe because the evidence is so compelling. You believe because you want it to be true. And so just admit that first, and then we'll understand who we're talking to, why we're talking to you, and where you're coming from. Because you're not making an honest statement here that I should somehow be overwhelmed by the presentation of the compelling evidence. Because there isn't any. All right. So then this IRF guy. Sorry. I mean, is this an abbreviation for some kind of new form of retardation? But anyway, how does the free-falling object collect force? So I think he meant free-falling. Okay, so, I mean, I shouldn't have to explain how, just because I have explained it, you know. I mean, you're asking me, like, how does a laser beam burn a hole in a piece of paper or something? I mean, how does the application of a force to something make it move? Well, shit, I've explained that 600 different ways. But anyway, we'll try one more for the hell of it. But it's, you know, I don't have any enthusiasm. So we'll just stick with the rain analogy, okay? And so I'm asking you to bend your little brain just a little bit and just understand it's, you know, you're just trying to come up with a way of modeling it so you can understand. I guess I don't need both colors for this. All right, so let's just say there was no gravity, okay? There's no gravity, but there's still an Earth, all right? So we'll just pretend there's no gravity. But there is just this stuff called rain, okay? So the rain still falls, all right? And it falls in a direction towards the Earth. So there's no gravity affecting this object, but there is rain, okay? Okay, and the rain just happens to move at 9.8 meters per second or whatever you want to say. It's a little thin, isn't it? It's always something to work on. The draw is very nice, but yes, the contrast is too... Yeah, it's all a lighting issue, I suppose. That doesn't help, really. All right, I'll fix it, I think. Back. Yeah, not much better. Anyway, so yes, there's rain coming down, okay? And this object isn't moving, and here's your ground, right? Okay, so, I mean, you can figure this out, right? That there's no rain going this way, back up this way, and there's only rain falling this way, and so obviously the object would get hit by the rain. Now, the truth is, you know, you can go one step a little bit more complicated, and you can say that the object is actually a bucket, all right? And it's actually collecting the rain. And you could think that the little drops don't change in the sense that they still are falling at the same rate, so they're still trying to move. And it would be just like you pushing a bucket sideways, okay? You crash into the bucket, you're going this way, and you crash into the bucket, right? And you have to push the bucket. You know, you have little legs, you know, and you know, you're gonna push, okay, on the bucket. You know that the heavier the thing is, the slower you move, the lighter it is, the faster you move. So the less energy it takes from you, the lighter it is versus the heavier it is, the more energy you're gonna have to apply to it to make it move. And that's all there is, okay? And so this would be the same as gravity, you know, if we just recognize that all we're doing is applying a pressure. So pushing something sideways, you have the problem is there's friction the whole way. And you don't have friction here until you hit the ground. Okay? So there's no friction. So as you're free falling, okay, you're collecting force the whole time. So you can imagine that, yes, the bucket, you know, when you're, if we make this the ground all the way down here, right, and you're going to fall this distance, you can get the idea that, you know, here you're only going to have one raindrop, and when you're at here, you've collected three, and by the time you're here, you know, because it's all about the time you have to collect the rain. How long are you in the rain? So if you're going sideways, you can understand that, yeah, I'm going to collect rain the whole time. Okay, it's all going to be about time. All right, how much time do I spend in the rain? It doesn't really matter that you're moving. It's just about how much time. So if I move for 1 second, I'm going to collect the same amount of rain, okay, as if I just stand still for 1 second. Because, you know, I'm just collecting the stuff that's passing through this line. And, you know, so by the time it's down here, it's collected quite a bit of pushers. So it's got 6 or 7 or 10 or 12 people pushing the bucket now. So you can understand the bucket will move much faster because there's more things pushing it. Get it? So that's how. Free falling means you're not connected to the ground. You're not connected to something that can steal your energy. So in the going sideways example, you know, unless you make this really greasy, you know, like ice or something, you figure out some way to get rid of the friction, you know that some portion of the energy, like, you know, 25% or 50% or something like that, is going to leak into the ground. So for every bit of energy you push this way, the ground is dragging and you're pushing the ground, okay? So you're pushing not just the object, you're pushing the ground it's connected to. So when you're connected to something, like if I connected this, if I just put a little steel bar here and I let the thing fall next to the bar, right? You can understand that if I tilt that bar just a little bit and now it has to slide across it, that's friction and that'll take some of my energy. It'll also slow down the process, which means, you know, I'll have more time in the force, but I'll also be pushing on this object more. And so, you know, my energy will be, the extra time will be, the extra rain I'll collect from the extra time I'm in the rain will end up leaking into the friction. And so that water I won't keep. So it's like when something touches the bucket, you know, if I move something over here, a little stick, and it touches the bucket, it takes one of the pushers out of the bucket. So any friction, so with the air and other nonsense, it steals some of the energy that would be in the bucket if you didn't have a connection to something where it can leak out, like a sponge, you know. So when you have any other contact with an object, it's like it's a sponge and it's going to absorb the water you've collected. And certainly when you hit the ground, you're going to give it all away because the ground is going to be a big sponge and it's going to suck up all your energy. Good enough. We should be satisfied I've answered your question anyway. All right, so we'll go find the other comments. All right, website comment. So chapter one of the book. So it's not really, I mean, yes, I didn't give a whole explanation in the first chapter. I just referenced the idea of what charge would be. And so you have to watch the second video, and that explains more completely the interactions between electrons and protons and their inverse nature. But let's just take your argument for what it's worth, right? Which is just, quote, miney little nitpicky bullshit, but okay. I did say it incompletely because, yeah, I'm trying to be brief. So I didn't provide all the details. And again, the diagram in the second video, chapter 2, does cover the subject, but whatever. Okay. All right, you said proton forces pass right through electrons. Yeah, it doesn't cause momentum. But what I also said was when the force passes through the electron, it's turned into a proton force. So it comes in blue, it comes out red. And then for the proton, if it comes in the opposite color, red, it ends up turning blue. So, yes, the force changes. So, yes, it passes through the electron as if the electron will feel nothing. It won't move. But the force will be changed, okay? And that ends up creating perfect charges. That is, they perfectly model Maxwell's drawing of what a charge would look like. All right. Electrons and electron forces pass through protons. Yes, it passes through, but it's changed its identity. So the electron force is changed into a proton force on exit. All right. If you struck an electron between two protons, then the force from the protons would pass right through the electron, and the protons would be pushed apart, not pulled together. Yes, that's if you don't change the identity of the force. So obviously, if the proton force goes through an electron and is changed into an electron force, the other proton won't see it because it doesn't see electron force. Then it comes out a proton force after it goes through the proton. So the protons wouldn't feel each other's force because no, say, red force could ever get to the other red object because it would have to go through the force, the object, the electron, that changed it to blue. So, again, you're just, you know, you could pay a little more attention. You know, you could be fair, okay, and recognize that I said right in the video that the next chapter is going to be about this shit. And now, you know, so, fine, okay. You want the whole thing in one chapter. Well, I don't know who wrote a book like that, especially a physics book like that, but whatever. All right, I'll race and just draw it real quickly. But, I mean, I've been over it so many times. All right, should be back. All right, so you have two kinds of... So this is such a, you know, what people should be saying is, wow, you know, Gary, that's really, it's really interesting, you know, that you could come up with such a simple scenario, okay, that explains something so perfectly, you know, that, you know, it could really be possible to even do that. It's just miraculous that you explained something like the strong nuclear force and the creation of what's called a deuteron or whatever you want to call it. In just such a simple way. So let's say these are protons. So I should have probably done the other color, but it doesn't really matter. So this is a proton, and this is a proton, and this is your electron in between. All right. So if I took a red force and pushed it through here, so a red force is going this way. It's going to hit the proton. Well, it's going to push it, okay? This is, I got the wrong force, obviously. All right, so obviously if it's a proton force and it hits the proton, it sticks to the proton and provides momentum this way or takes away acceleration going the opposite way. So if it's going this way, all right, and it meets a force going this way, then this will reflect and this will reflect. And, you know, the object will lose its momentum. It'll lose a piece of its momentum. So if it had four bits attached to it going this way, and now it, you know, it hits one going this way, okay, this one reflects, and this one reflects. And so now it's only got three bits, you know, and you can see that it's, you know, can lose all of its energy eventually. But it can either go this way or that way. It can't go both ways at the same time. So anyway, all right, and then if I had an electron force hit it, this could draw better. All right, let me find a better color for the red. Yeah. All right, we shall use orange. Well, it's clearly a different color. Don't know how orange it is, but anyway, so let's just follow that through. So that one goes straight through the proton, doesn't stick, doesn't provide momentum, doesn't provide any pushing force on the proton. So it just goes straight through. But the catch is, okay, is that when it comes out, all right, it's now a proton force. So the proton can't do anything else. Everything that comes in, so it doesn't matter whether purple or orange, hits it. It always radiates purple. Okay. So that's all. The only energy that comes out is blue or purple or whatever, dark. And the same is true for the other objects. So no matter what comes in, purple comes in, obviously it's going to go straight through and come out orange. And all the oranges reflect or stick. And so you end up with an object that just radiates orange. All right, so that creates your perfect scenario for creating charge. So again, so the purple is going to go right through the electron because it's the opposite color, right? But it's going to come out orange. So it's going to go in purple, and then when it comes out, it's going to be orange again. And what's going to happen is it's going to go straight through here, and it's going to change color again and come out purple. All right, so it comes in orange, it leaves purple. So that's kind of interesting. And obviously the net result is that this will never feel any, all the only color that can ever hit it from this side is orange, right? And the same is true over here. So it can't get any, there can't be any blue force, purple force pushing on this proton in that direction, and there can't be any pushing on this direction on this one. So you clearly get an object that has a big, there's a gigantic vacuum, okay, of force created in between here. No blues. So you have lots of blues in the regular field coming in, and you have nothing going this way. So obviously these are going to tend to go this way and move towards each other. And then how you give this velocity is a whole nother story. But obviously if this one has a velocity and is moving into the field, this one won't feel any of it. So it's going to have a free will to keep moving in this direction at its original velocity. You can't slow this one down essentially until it crashes into the electron. So, you know, it can't be slowed down. So where this one could be dragged, this one can't. And it's going to constantly push this one forward. And so that's how you can create a little engine that could. That's how you create a piece of matter that can fly across space. So this is what cosmic rays are made out of. This kind of arrangement. This by itself, ain't going to happen. It has to be connected. It has to be in this form to keep moving through the universe. Yeah, it's really clear enough, I think. All right, so the contrast and the colors needs to be a little better. Let's see if I can fix that while I'm here. Well, that is a bit better. So anyway, so orange goes in. Orange is converted into blue. You know, blue goes right through the electron, orange comes out again, goes right through the proton, comes out blue. It's just that simple. Anyway, all right, so that's enough of that. Yeah, so that's better, contrast-wise. All right, so we made some progress. Problem is, you know, it crashes the camera, so what if I change the settings in the video? So I have to stitch all these videos together. What am I looking for? This should still work, hopefully. There we go. All right, so we just finished reading this crap and move on to the next little bit, if there is one. Okay. Sorry. Details. Shouldn't have unpaused till I completed my details. Okay. If you stuck a proton between the two electrons, they would also effectively not see it, and the force would pass right through and deflect the other electron. Yes, the force changes, so it's just that simple. Based on what you said, neither scenario would pack in electrons or protons. So, yes, based on, you know, the half story I gave you, right? I gave you half the story. The electron is inert to the proton force. That was half the story. The other half is that it changes the force. Yes, but I just didn't want to get into those details. Did you mean proton forces are blocked, absorbed by the electrons? Well, if that happened, it doesn't go to work. An electron force are blocked, absorbed by the protons, because then the argument works. Well, it doesn't really work. So, you know, blocked, absorbed is a tricky business. If the electron gains momentum, then obviously it's not going to work, okay, because the electron's going to be moving into the proton. But anyway, so I'm just saying it is so simple, and here it does explain charge really well. I mean, it explains everything really well, but I just mean it's just people should at least concede that, oh, that simple mechanism accounts for the creation of charge, and all of the manifestations of charge and all the behaviors of charge are all explained by just a simple little trick. I mean, there should just be some concession that, wow, that's really interesting. I don't believe it. I don't think that's the answer. I don't think that's how it works. But yeah, it is interesting that all you need is one little feature that you change between electrons and protons. You know, that you just need this 2 plus 2 plus 2. Two kinds of force, two kinds of matter, and two kinds of interaction, right? Pushing or changing the force. And that provides a perfect explanation. And it is quite perfect. I mean, it is quite perfect. So anyway, it's just funny that none of you can concede. Well, yeah, that is at least curious and interesting that there could be something that simple that explains it. Oh, I don't believe it. But yeah, something that simple could work. You know, you can't even concede. Well, anyway. All right, so now this guy wants to keep arguing that the Edward Doughty Jr., the failed attempts to detect microlensing. So he says that's what it says in the video, but it really doesn't say that. So he wants to keep arguing that the argument made by Edward Doughty was a conclusive proof that falsifies relativity. And it doesn't. Okay, it's reason to doubt their claims, but that's all it is. It's just reason to doubt their claims. You know, it doesn't provide some sort of decisive proof that light isn't bent by gravity. It just shows that the only evidence they have of light being bent is evidence where scatter could be the explanation. So I guess I should explain that part. So two lectures that are basically the same lecture, links to, and yeah, I've seen both of them. One was in the Electric Universe and the other one was some other thing. And, they're okay-ish arguments, but they're just okay-ish. The proof isn't something so obvious that nobody could miss it kind of thing. I mean, he doesn't really explain the experiments and how they were conducted. He just vaguely references experiments. And he certainly doesn't point out what I think are the really important details. And he certainly doesn't even point out that, you know, Einstein said you wouldn't see an Einstein ring because gravity doesn't provide the proper lens. I mean, you're going to just get a tiny little, the thinnest possible little line of photons. You can't get enough photons to see an Einstein ring because gravity doesn't bend light the right way. As you get closer, it bends the light less, and as you get more, and as you get further away, it bends it less. And you need, for a lens, you need exactly the opposite effect to create a focus. So it's only going to bend the light in exactly the right amount in one tiny shred of the lens. So it's not working like a regular lens, which is it collects light from a whole giant area and then sends all of that light to one place. So it's not a light collecting lens. That's what lenses are. They're collectors. They collect light from lots of locations, like a parabolic mirror. They collect all the light and send it to one location. That's why you can see it, okay? But you can't see it if the focuses are all wrong. If there's only one tiny shred that sends it to the right location, if your mirror is flat, then only one place is going to send it. And that's it. Alright. What part was I going to draw? Sorry, this video is a little sloppy. I know there was something I wanted to draw a picture of. Well, think about it. Alright. So the Eddington experiment is a very specific experiment. Right, I mean, it does a very specific thing. And yes, they always sort of draw it the wrong way. And I have sort of said things that aren't exactly true. So Dowdy's argument is that there's something called the Lamb of the Sun, and I guess it's not a full radius. I would argue you have to go a full radius away from the sun, or, you know, you're really not going to get out of the issue. The point that could be made is that the sun is producing a bunch of little particles. So it's a dense amount of matter that the sun is producing in this area. Okay, and the simple argument is that the light from all of these experiments, except for Eddington's, right? So Eddington knew he can't look through the atmosphere of the sun, and he knew he had to pick a star out here somewhere. So this wasn't about a star behind the sun bending the light around the sun. That's bullshit. This was about, you know, the Earth being here, okay, and you're going to bend the light. Well, that is behind, actually. No, it's more like the sun. Well, let me just move the Earth. Yeah, that'll be good. That's the way to go. So the line of sight would be something like this. So the Earth is here, and you're looking at an object that's some distance from the sun, all right, to make sure that you're not going to go through this heavy atmosphere. And the idea is that you're seeing it here, okay, and it's actually, you know, that's the real location is here, all right, and the light has been bent to make it look like that. All right, so that's the difference you're looking for. And obviously it's a tiny difference, and, you know, it's not going to be this obvious, especially from ground telescopes. So what Dowdy doesn't, the point he doesn't make that I have made over and over again, is that from space you have 400 times better viewing. So the image is 400 times, you know, just imagine these two spots being 400 times bigger, okay? It's, the resolution is insanely better from space to be able to view something like this, and you don't need an eclipse. Another great point. Because the eclipse really doesn't work in the sense that it's unfortunate the moon isn't a little bit bigger, okay, and it doesn't block out enough of the sun's corona anyway. You know, it'd be better if it blocked out all the light completely, which it really doesn't do. Anyway, all right. So the point is all the other experiments, there's all the other experiments they've done with microwaves and different energy coming off of stuff. So they have some source out here, some whatever, that's producing gamma rays or microwaves or some other kind of crap. And they are flying, you know, from that source, you know, in all directions. And, you know, some of that energy will in fact go through these little particles and it scatters, okay? That's a known fact. So it hits particles and it scatters in all kinds of directions. It scatters this way, all right? It scatters this way. It scatters this way. It scatters huge amounts, okay? So instead of being just this little tiny deflection, this little 1.28 angstroms or whatever, this tiny little angle, it can scatter. Like, I could be on the Earth over here, and I could see this object over here. Still be some signal that'll actually hit the atmosphere and actually go in some extreme directions. So clearly, I'm going to be able to know the source is there, because I can get the reflected, the deflected through the scatter information that tells me the source is still out there. Okay, and obviously it gets stronger and stronger as it goes further out here, and I get more of a direct line of sight. But I don't need a direct line of sight to actually see it. Now, we already know this happens because on Earth, if I draw it as a flat surface, it's round, but, you know, and there's clouds and atmosphere up here. We already know this works because, you know, we can bounce radio waves, you know, great distances, you know, by scattering essentially it off the atmosphere. And so we can send a signal where there is no line of sight. I mean, it probably is better to draw it as a curved surface just to point out that, you know, you can have a radio over here and you can pick it up over here because you don't need line of sight. You can just have it bounce, you know, its way to the other antenna. And that's sort of what the other experiments are cheating and using. So they're saying, oh, we detected it over here, so, you know, it must have been bent by gravity. Well, it wasn't gravity that bent it. Okay, it was some other mechanism. So no matter where I put the Earth, I could put the Earth here, I could put the Earth here, I could put the Earth here, and guess what? In all places, it's going to say, oh yeah, we saw that radio source. The radio source was bent. But it's going to, no matter where I go, it's going to be bent. And it'll be bent a different amount. It's always going to take the shortest path between me and it. And I can make that path anywhere in here. I can just say it went, you know, I can do the calculation and say it went right here. You know, say to get here, theoretically it would have to be a certain amount of bending. So I could just make the argument that this light that I saw here passed really close to the sun, and I could say it's 2.2, right? But if I want to make this 2.2, even though it's a different angle, I'll just say, oh, the light I got, it bent here, out here. That, you know, it was further away from the sun. And then the one over here, oh, it was even further, and I still got the 2.2. So I just call it, you know, because there's no way of knowing what photons you're seeing. You don't know whether you're seeing a photon that went right over here, going through the scatter field, or went through the scatter field here. You can't see. So you can just make it up. You can just say, I'll pick this one because it gives me the right 2.2 number. And that's the big flaw in the other experiments, is they're circular. You know, they can always get the same number, the same amount of bending, because they can just make up how close they were to the, how close the photons went to the sun. They can just decide it went right there, or it went right there. So the other corroborating evidence also sucks. So this is a big problem. They believe something, and the experiment that should be decisive, the Eddington experiment would be decisive if they could do it well. You know, they don't have that experiment. And they didn't do it with Jupiter. They haven't done it with other gravitational sources. And they really should be able to do it. Frankly, with the 400 times better resolution from space, it's a real doable experiment. Einstein approximated the difference between doing it with the sun or doing it with Jupiter. He approximated that it'd be 100 times harder to do it from Jupiter. Well, from space, you're 400 times better resolution. So you're still way ahead. You could use Jupiter from space, and you still should be 300 times better than the Eddington experiment in terms of viewability. So your prospect of seeing it is 300 times better if you use Jupiter, okay, that doesn't have any atmosphere problem. You know, once you're outside, its atmosphere has a clear delineation. It's not shooting big giant flames out and sunspots and all of that crap. Its mass isn't jiggling all over the place. So you have 300 times better experiment, 300 times better viewing of your experiment, 300 times more capacity to do the experiment, and they haven't done it from space. That's what we're supposed to believe. So you have this huge advantage. The experiment is decisive if you can do it, and they've never done it. They've never even tried, as far as we know. Never even tried the experiment. And this isn't something science should have to explain. This isn't the wrong head on the dinosaur kind of thing. This isn't a problem. You people all believe anyway. You just don't care that your evidence sucks. Having sucky evidence isn't a problem. That's what you're saying to me loud and clear. Okay. So I think that's just plain fucking shit. You know, it's important to have good evidence, not shitty evidence. All right, let's see if there's anything else we have to take care of here. God, I just hate this planet. All right, so it's just that's about it. Yeah, we already did this Dowdy stuff before, and he's just repeating the claim. And that's fine. Like I said, if you want to take it as conclusive evidence, fine. I'm just saying, I know it wouldn't convince me if I believed in relativity this evidence wouldn't be hard enough to, it would disturb me, okay? It would give me reason to doubt, but it wouldn't be convincing. That's my only argument. You want to be convinced by it, that's fine, but then I'm saying you're committing the same crime as the original believers are committing, and that you're letting too weak an argument win. The argument that wins shouldn't be the weakest argument. So, that's all I got to say about that. I mean, I wish Doughty had some hard evidence, like we did look and it wasn't there. If he could show us the experiment they did where they repeated the Eddington experiment and didn't find the bending, that would be good. But just to say there's no evidence of them doing the experiment and therefore no proof validating Eddington, well, that's not saying we've proven the opposite. And that's my point. You haven't proven that light isn't bent. Let's see. Yeah, the other part was about, you know, he analyzes the motion of the suns in the center of the Milky Way galaxy, where they show that they're, you know, the stuff that happens over a 20-year period, you know, these, you know, they're not even time-lapse photos. They're just, you know, synthesized kind of positions where objects are. And, you know, he's pointing out how, well, when that star is behind the black hole, it should be lensed. But these are photographs made over a 20-year period. They're just, you're not going to see the lensing in those photographs because they don't represent the tiny amount of light that would be coming from the lensed object, so it wouldn't really show up. So I don't think that's a very good argument. The better argument is the black hole itself should be creating a lensed image of all the universe behind it. And so everything behind it should be showing up as scattered light. All right, anyway, but that's the whole problem, you know. How much is gravity? How much is scatter? It's just like the wave particle thing. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, scatter is an important function happening in the universe. And it's like the modern physics is just ignoring that it will duplicate, bending. All right, anyway, it'll look just like it. And it's not just like it. All right, so enough. So till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. It's really enough. Yeah. Okay, so this has been a draftphysics.com, debatephysics.com also, but again, you need argument, counter-argument. You need somebody to actually say something. What's the excuse for not doing the experiment when you have 400 times better resolution? What's the excuse?